Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. And we are talking about everyone's favorite topic, taxes, baby. Let's go.
The big, beautiful tax bill.
Man.
It's big. It's beautiful. It's, I don't know. It's a tax bill.
I'm excited about it.
We're going to break it down. We're going to tell everybody, look, we're going to give you the good, bad, the ugly. We're going to talk about how it applies to pilots. Does the overtime tax, does it apply? It might.
Yeah, we get to that at the end. You got to listen to the end to find out if your double time trip is you get a tax deduction for your overtime, right?
Yep. We're going to talk about who it applies to, right? You know, you turn on the TV, they say, oh, the rich are going to get all the tax breaks. And then the Republicans will say something completely different. We don't really care what the Republicans or the Democrats say. We are reading the tax code. And in order to understand it, we're bringing on Hall CPAs, Nathan Soza, who's going to break it down for us. And we're going to look at it objectively. We don't care about Trump or the other side. We're just going to talk about how it applies and the real things that came out of it so that you have a clear vision of exactly how it impacts you, the economy, your investments, and everything that that's going on in your life so you can have a more educated conversation with others about what is going on in the tax bill.
And more thoroughly plan your tax strategy, which is Nathan Soza is a tax strategist at Hall CPA. We've had him on before. He's a wealth of knowledge with that. But I don't have anything to add to that. That was so beautifully said, Ryan. Let's get to the show.
Let's get into it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Nathan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. It's a fun time to talk about this. Nothing better than 4th of July, hot dogs, fireworks, and tax cuts, right?
Tax breaks,
pretty
baby.
Pretty pro-American, I feel like.
That's right. I remember we spoke, for anybody that doesn't know, Nathan Soza is my tax strategist. He's at Hall CPA. And we spoke back in, what, April? And you said, yeah, it's coming back. Like, don't worry about it. Bonus depreciation's coming back. And so we actually formed a lot of decisions. We made a lot of decisions in our own personal investing portfolio based on that. And so we're glad to see it come to fruition. We're here to talk about the big, beautiful bill. So with that, let's hop in. What are we looking at here?
Yeah. So this is a great way to preface the bill, is like to preface what's going on. It's like everyone's trying to figure out what's going on, what happened, how big is it, how bad is it, all that stuff, right? The way I like to think about it is that, like, we got a couple new chess pieces to play with. We got a couple new provisions and opportunities to use going forward. But if you're in a board game context, back in 2017, right, we got a bunch of new rules to the game. And then they're temporary. There were sunsets, and no one knew what was going to happen when we got to 2025. Guess where we are now? We're in 2025. And all of those temporary rules, those are all permanent now. So that's the way I think about it. Is that, like, this is a big bill. And while there are definitely some changes, a lot of it is focused on making the 2017 rules permanent rules going forward.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. No matter what side you're on of the aisle, it feels like the Republicans literally are calling it the big, beautiful tax bill. So that kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are calling it, you know, a tax cut for the wealthiest billionaires and not good for the average American. I'd love to keep politics out of this aside and just talk facts for a minute. You know, it's interesting that, like you said, the Tax and Jobs Cut Act of 2017, it gave us tax breaks like regular Americans. It cut the taxable rates down, you know, for taxpayers. And yes, they were temporary. And like you said, Nathan, they expired in 2025. But guess what? Those tax breaks for regular W-2 income earners are extended. So, you know, without getting into if this is for billionaires or just for, you know, less affluent people, the fact is that we have tax cuts for everyday W-2 Americans. That's a fact. And so, you know, that's a really good thing. And also, I wanted to kind of get into the standard deduction, because the standard deduction increased, right, in this tax bill. And that, guess what? That helps out everyday average Americans. That's not a billionaire. You know, the billionaires aren't using the standard deduction on their tax return, right? And they're not a W-2 filer. So this is actually really good for the average American, I feel like, in that respect, right? There's other things that got cut, and we can get into that. The standard deduction is a big deal for pilots because we no longer can do that. You know, we used to be able to, you know, deduct cable expenses because we watched the Weather Channel before we left the house, and we could deduct headsets. And we did this whole crazy per diem thing, right? Where we would figure out all the layovers. I hated that, by the way. And there was per diem calculators and how much you got for every state and layover and city and all that. But now they just have this thing called the standard deduction, which kind of just makes it easier and simpler to do your taxes, which I'm a big fan of. Can you kind of talk about how that changed?
Yeah, definitely. So what happened there is the new cap got bumped up to $31,000 for those who do married filing joint, right? So it's a little bit bigger. And essentially what happened in 2017 is like it doubled, right? It got doubled and got bigger, and now it's all inflation tagged, right? That's why like originally it was $24,000, now it's $31,000. So do that math in your head for inflation the past couple of years. But basically, this basically makes it way easier. And hey, wow, you guys love the simplicity too. The accountants love the simplicity too, because there's not as much we have to keep track of and look into. It's like, all right, need your lockbox expenses, right? All right, I need these random little things that could help you save, but we just got to make sure we document and get all those things to prove that stuff out. So essentially what happened, all the unreimbursed employee expenses that went away in 2017, those are never coming back at this point. So those are gone forever. They're not coming back. And so you basically like to think about standard versus itemized. If you have state and local income tax, high mortgage interest, and you're a high charitable giver, you're probably going to itemize. If you're lacking in one of those three categories, you're probably going to be a standard deduction person. And that's better for you because the itemized deduction is only if you have those amount of expenses in over $31,000. If you're less than that, then you're going to get a bigger deduction for yourself and help save on taxes. Like you mentioned, Ryan, everyone gets to take advantage of that.
Yeah. And so let's break this down a little bit further. So when I think of, you know, the wealthy, right, maybe we'll cut this off at 150K of household income a year. Let's talk about how this tax bill benefited people making, say, less than $150,000 a year, because that's what we're really talking about, right? Because I think this really plays into the greater economy and maybe how Americans will actually, at least at the federal level, will have more money in their pockets to spend. And that could drive economic growth in the United States. Can we kind of talk about how maybe the 150K people are benefited?
Yeah, definitely. So I would actually even raise that to 200K people, right? So 200K people, married filing joint, right? That's the key. So the first provision that came out that still helps those people is auto loan interest, right? So if basically, and this is a key point too, is that we just talked about standard deduction. The next couple provisions we're going to talk about go on top there. You don't have to itemize. There's no special. So like no tax on tips deduction, no tax on overtime deduction, auto loan interest. Everyone has the ability to take that without itemizing. So it's what we call an above the line deduction in tax. And so that means it's regardless of itemizing or anything like that, you're going to be able to use these deductions, right? So it's really, so auto loan's a big one. The phase out starts at $200,000. So you can totally use that, deduct up to $10,000 of auto loan interest. There's of course caveats to the bill because they don't just say, hey, great, you get to take all these deductions, right? It's got to be a brand new car. It's got to be a qualifying vehicle. And what does that mean? Basically, it has to be less than 14,000 pounds. So can't lease it. And has to be assembled in the United States. So any kind of, so unfortunately, that means like a lot of Toyotas, a lot of those types of vehicles don't qualify. But Teslas, Fords, those, even though they might not be manufactured necessarily in the U.S., as long as they are assembled in a factory in the United States, it's a qualifying vehicle.
Can you talk about just for the me of 10 years ago, what does itemizing mean? What does that mean for those who itemize and who don't?
Yeah, so itemizing basically means that if you have, so basically for now in current day time in the past basically 8 years, if you have state and local income tax, that basically means you have these extra deductions that the government says, hey, we want you to be able to deduct these against your taxes because you have maybe expenses greater than what we normally give you. The standard deduction basically says, hey, we think this is the cost of life, so we'll let you write that off against your taxable income, basically, right? That's the standard deduction. It's kind of just an average that they make together. Not correct, but that's just what the government gives. And then the itemized deduction is basically saying, hey, if you have greater than $31,000 in state and local income tax, mortgage interest, and on charitable contributions, guess what? You get to take advantage of that. So if you have $40,000 of those three items together, then you're going to be able to itemize.
At the end of the day, what I'm hearing is more tax breaks for even the lower income earners in the United States. So where is all this billionaire nonsense coming from? What's the things that are benefiting the billionaires that, and when we say billionaires, I mean, true billionaires, right? Like, you know, I'm not a billionaire. I don't think anybody on the show is a billionaire. I must take time.
Not yet. Working now.
Yeah, we're working on it. Right. And, you know, so I know us normal guys, like we're going to get depreciation back to 100%, right?
Right.
That applies to everybody, whether you make $0 a year or make billions of dollars per year. So what is like that specific carve out that the Democrats are talking about? Because I'm generally curious to kind of see both ends of this, right? Because you hear all this noise, right? We always talk about, you know, turn the TV off and ignore the doom and gloom. But what is the unfairness in this bill that people are talking
about? Yeah, so this is where like the politics get into it, right? It's like, it's interesting, like you mentioned. We'll talk about the salt cap in a little bit, but actually the way it's written is it doesn't allow super high income billionaires to utilize it any longer. They actually don't get to use that. So what it comes down to basically is if there's a business provision, the Democrats assume that it just goes to the wealthiest people. That's what they assume for the most part. If there's a business provision, business expansion, they say, oh, that's for the wealthy. That's not for everyday Americans. It's basically what they do because it's politics, right? It's politics. They have platforms they have to run on. There's fundraising they have to do, right? Like let's all be realistic about this. It's all about how long they can stay in office. Not all of them can care as much about their constituents like we hope they do. But essentially, it's the business provisions that come down into it that they're looking at.
You know, I had a funny epiphany last night after coming home from the Houston property tour. And that was that, you know, who is writing all of these articles? It's like you pop open Apple News and you think about, does anybody know any journalists? Like, they're probably not these like really switched on entrepreneurs. Like, they study journalism. And they're probably making $90,000 a year and they're not killing it in 2025. And so everything kind of seems doom and gloom to them. I don't know. I just had that weird, it's funny. The people writing the articles aren't the people that are taking advantage of bonus depreciation. So I don't know. But it's like you could if you just listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think that's the thing. It's like, right? Like you've got to, if you're listening to this show, I hope that the light bulb has gone off and you're like, okay, I can control my destiny, and it starts with knowing what the government lays out in tax incentives, right?
Right.
Like if you don't like your tax, change your facts. You know, whatever you're doing day to day to position yourselves. And oh, by the way, like this tax bill gives you a tax break, even if you just don't do anything and you just do your right. W-2, right?
Absolutely.
And your standardized deduction goes up. Your auto loan interest goes up, right?
Okay. So Nathan, what else is in this thing? I really want to get to like every one of these major bullet points.
So we'll focus on the individual provisions we mentioned a second ago, right? We talked about auto loan interest. We'll talk about the no tax on blank. That's what I've called them on like whatever that were presidential priorities and promises made and how those wound up coming. So I'll talk about Social Security first, the no tax on Social Security, because that's the shortest one in my opinion. Sorry, there's no actual no tax on Social Security. That's not what happened. We'll just be realistic. It's one of those things that we just talked about where politicians say, hey, this is what happened, right? And everyone goes, oh, great. And then you actually look at what it is, and it's not the case. So basically, seniors, anyone $65 and older, actually gets a personal exemptions was a thing that went away back in 2017, came back now because they got bigger standard deductions. But seniors get to take advantage of this. So basically, you get an extra $6,000 tax break on top of standard deduction, et cetera, all this stuff, right? So that's the no tax on Social Security. It's not actually, doesn't mean Social Security is not taxable. It just means that you can get an additional deduction for having lived to 65. It's a kudos to you from the government.
Interesting.
Real quick, before we move on to the next things, I do want to kind of come back and make sure that, you know, if you've been following along on the show, we've talked about buying airplanes and leasing them back to a flight school, using them for a business purpose. We've talked a ton about real estate investing. We've talked about the benefits of bonus depreciation and cost segregation. Literally at the happy hour last night, I had a pilot come up to me, pull up his K-1 that I believe, Nathan, your firm did at Hall CPA, and show me, hey, my taxable income at Southwest was, I don't know, $450K. and here's a $104,000 deduction on my taxes. I listened to your podcast. Yep. I did what you said, and I got $100,000 off my taxes this year. That's real. Those are real dollars, right?
Yeah. Right.
Just by following some of the friendly discussions that we have on the show. Again, we're not giving tax, legal, or investment advice, but this tax bill did something that I just want to underscore. People are, what are the benefits of this thing for real estate and for plane buyers, right? It brought back 100% bonus depreciation. And I know we have a million episodes on it, but break that down. What does that mean now when you buy an airplane that's for business purpose? What does that mean when you buy that $1 million Cirrus and give it back to a flight school?
Or you buy real estate and you cost seg it.
Buy real estate. We're buying this Houston portfolio. Tate and I are teamed up on that. What does that mean now? What greater tax benefits does an investor have now because of this bill?
Totally. So basically, 100% bonus appreciation. We've always had some form of it since like around 2010, but it's always kind of like we get 100% for a little bit and then it goes back to 150. It's been a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It goes up and down. It is permanently going to remain at 100% until Congress decides to come in and say they want to change it. And guess what? Congress, whether Democrats in power, whether Republicans in power, whoever it is, hasn't really touched bonus depreciation. Maybe they let it fall off, but guess what? Since it's 100%, it can't fall off any longer. So what that means is if you purchase that plane, if you purchase real estate and you get a cost segregation study, that means that anything that's an asset on listed on there, which planes, which a jet Gulfstream falls into, is depreciated less than 20 years. Guess what? You means you get to take that deduction in 2025.
And guess what? An airplane that's, let's just get a little more direct. $1 million Cirrus that you buy is now 100% write off, right?
Right.
100% exactly. Of the airplane's written off. So now $1 million airplane, get $1 million write off to buy it. Maybe you borrow $800,000 to buy it, put $200K down, give it to a flight school. And now you're getting $1 million tax efficiency on your tax returns, right? Which can almost pay for the airplane, right? And I want to underscore this for two reasons. One, if you're listening and you're a pilot, this is like massively beneficial to you for buying planes and real estate for business purpose. Obviously, real estate's for business purpose. But number two, I also think it's important to talk about how this bill sets up the economy, because now people are incentivized to do
to
these
go
things
spend
now.
Spend money. You know, that was the point money. I was just going to say. You know, you think we're going into a recession? No freaking way. I mean, people are going to be spending like crazy because now you got 100% bonus. You got a tax problem. You just spend your way out of it. This is what happened in 2017 when we got bonus for 5 years, 2017 to 2022. Of course, there's the wild card of COVID there and injecting trillions of dollars into the economy. But overall, things went nuts. I mean, real estate values went nuts because everybody was saying, oh, I can buy a $1 million apartment building. Cost seg it. Now, I want to point something out that Nathan said 20-year lifespan. So it has to be less than 20-year lifespan in order to be eligible for 100% bonus depreciation. Real estate does not fall into that. You might be wondering, well, hang on, real estate's 27 and a half years for residential, 39 years for commercial. That's not less than 20-year lifespan. So how do you write off real estate? Well, through a cost segregation study. So go back and listen to one of those episodes where we talk about that.
Yeah. So good for real estate, good for the economy, good for And also buying manufacturing equipment, right? People want to
buy
plows and backhoes and all these things that run their construction businesses. All that equipment now is 100% bonus depreciated, and that is a huge deal for people that are starting a business and creating jobs and doing economies. Nathan, what else is there? I hear there's this thing about $1,000 when your kid's born, and then you can put money in to some type of account. Is that still on the table?
I call this provision the Thanksgiving fight provision, because it's called a Trump account, right? It's like, I think it's on purpose. So you have to say his name at Thanksgiving when you're talking about what you're contributing. It's just my personal take on it. I just think it's funny. It's unfortunately politically themed. However, there is incentive. There's some decent items behind it. Basically, think of these Trump accounts as pre-18 and IRA accounts, basically. That's essentially what they are. And so basically, if you have a kiddo that's under 18, you can contribute up to $5,000 a year for them. And there'll be basically, once they're older than 18, they can use these items and take whatever you've gotten from the S&P 500 over that time frame and pull that out, whether for college tuition, to talk about getting like technician's licenses, or even paying down small business loans. If someone's entrepreneurial and they want to go get an SBA loan, right? They can be used for that. There's a $1,000 credit you get as long as the kiddo is born after January 1st, 2025, that you can make an election for. So if you contribute $1,000 in, let's say you do it this year. So actually, I may rephrase that because it doesn't start till next year. The program does not officially start until next year in July. But next year, if you have a kid that was born after that, you can claim the credit on your 2026 tax return when you do a contribution into that.
Nathan, I want to ask a really complex question, it might not even be interpreted yet. Let's get back to bonus depreciation for just a second. So the bonus depreciation is for land purchased after January 19th, 2025. That's when it goes back to 100%.
Yep.
So where is this no man's land, and what are all the nuances to it? Right? Like, if I bought a property on January 18th, are you telling me that I only get 40%?
Unfortunately, I am telling you that. That is the unfortunate piece. It's the unluckiest 19 days of 2025 so far. If you fall into
why did they pick the 19th and not, the first?
You know, this is one of those things where you might say it's a little political, because I don't know if you know what happened on January 20th, but a new thing happened in America where somebody may or may not have stepped into office. And so basically those days were the old administration. So you don't qualify. I'm not going to say who it was and what happened there, but you can figure that out. I initially thought, like, when I'm looking at this, like, my tax brain's going, I'm like, oh, it's for the budgeting purposes and policy stuff. And someone goes, dude, it's just the inauguration day. I'm like, oh, okay. So there's no science, no logic behind it. It's just political.
So I bought some vacant raw land, I think in like November or December of last year, just assume a December for purposes of discussion. We're building a new self-storage facility on it. Are you saying because I closed on that land in December, it won't qualify for 100% bonus depreciation after I finish building it a year from now? It won't qualify when I...
I'm glad you brought up that specific point, because self-constructed assets, it matters when you broke down. And it matters when you had, there's a multiple things we can do. We had something similar to this in 2017, right? So if you purchase raw land, no big deal, right? We can't depreciate land anyways. What matters is when did you break down and when did you get to around 10% of construction completion? And even then, there's still things that we can look at. There's elections we can take where we can basically componentize the building and say, hey, great, sorry. There's a portion of it. Let's say you broke ground in December, right? You immediately were able to get shovels in the ground and start working on it. Maybe you got part of it done. And that portion is unfortunately going to be in that 60 to 40% category for that month and a half time frame. But everything else that you've been working on since then is going to be eligible for 2025, 100% bonus depreciation.
Interesting. That is a huge nuance, because we're building a lot of self-storage facilities. We have one in Port Wentworth, Georgia that would apply to this. One in Oak Harbor, Washington, in the growth fund. We also have one in Bellingham that we're breaking ground on. So yeah, that's a big deal, because that could really change the tax efficiencies from those new construction projects. So that's very, very good.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of weird cost eggs coming, a lot of weird cost eggs and a lot of weird elections. Because what's great is that we don't have to worry about this in 2026. Anything that happens in 2026, it's a thing of the past. It's just going to be this weird timing thing we have in 2025.
You mean 2024?
2024. Yeah, last year.
Last year.
Right. So, So I guess what I'm saying is that we have the 19 days, 2025, that's not eligible, that we got to look into doing these weird elections. We won't have to worry about that in future years, because there's no weird 19 days we have to worry about.
Call those the Trump elections. Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground here, a lot about how taxes are being reduced for everybody, except maybe some exceptions, some phase outs to really high income earners or billionaires. Is there anything else? Because I'd love to get to the discussion about, all I hear is cut, 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 cut. I hear lots of cuts, and I know that we have a big national deficit right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that there was a lot of criticism of this tax bill and its inability to actually cut the deficit. And we had a whole conversation with an economist, Peter Linneman, on this, a few episodes ago. He wasn't so concerned about it, but I'm a little bit more in the camp of being concerned about the national deficit. Because I'd love to get to where we're actually cutting spending, because all we're talking about right now is cutting taxes. Is there any more cut on the cutting taxes side before we want to move on?
Cutting taxes side? Yes, there are some other places that where taxes have been cut. For example, the SALT cap is another place that's a really big opportunity where it'll benefit some folk, what I would consider to be high income earners, but doesn't benefit the billionaires. So what happened was, right now, SALT, basically, if you have state and local income tax, or if you live in Texas, high property taxes, you've only been able to deduct up to $10,000 of that. Now, that cap has been raised from $10,000 to $40,000. So it's significantly higher now, and it's a much better opportunity for people to deduct. However, once you get to $500,000, you start to phase out of that deduction.
So let me just break this down. So if I own a $2 million house in California, and I pay an obscene amount of you know, income tax, or maybe even Texas, because they have high income taxes, and I pay $25,000 in property
Texas
taxes
property
every year,
taxes. Yep.
I can deduct that against my earned income, essentially, right? And if I make under 500K, yeah.
Basically, essentially, I view this as in 2017, the Trump administration going, hey, just because California takes, you know, is charging you high taxes, don't put it on us. You can't deduct California's state tax against your federal income tax. And so they reduced that down to a $10,000 cap per year. Now it's a $40,000, which is actually a big concession from the federal government. But you're saying it phases out after $500,000.
It does. Basically, the way the math works out, once you get to $600,000, you basically go down $30,000 back to 10K. You can't go below 10K.
Right.
But once you get back to 600, you'd be like, at 600K, you start getting phased back down, essentially.
So effectively, a larger tax on the rich.
Basically,
that's more tax. Yeah, that's more taxes on the rich.
The taxes
it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
And so, just to be clear, before the tax and job, the tax
and cut jobs act.
Yeah, thank you. It's a tongue twister. What was the SALT? Was it just unlimited, or what was the rule before 2017?
Yeah, so it on paper it looked like it was unlimited, but there's this really not neat provision called alternative minimum tax that would kick in and would still limit you, right? And I think a lot of politicians didn't know or had never heard about that piece. And so you would still be limited ultimately. It just didn't look like that on paper.
Got it.
That's a great segue. What is the alternative minimum tax and is it still around?
The AMT is technically still around. Essentially, they just refreshed the limitation. Honestly, I can tell you.
Is it still called the AMT?
It's still called the AMT. There's nothing new. There's like really nothing new with it. They just refreshed it. So it's basically it's one of the same old type rules. There might be some people who get hit with it a little bit more. Essentially, it's just a way for the government that says, hey, you might got all these random tax breaks, but since you make so much money, we're just going to cap you in certain areas. I'll be honest.
How much do people really need to make before they start running into that?
It's like,
I mean, obviously, you've got a million adjusted gross income. So after all your deductions and bonus depreciation and write-offs and everything and all your tax shielding efforts, if you still made over $1 million on paper, you're looking at AMT.
Potentially. And even then, there's a lot of other, like, that's like the initial one. And there's like caveat. So AMT, I still don't really see, it might play in a little bit more, but it'll still basically be like a non-factor for the most part.
Okay.
What this type of tax bill that went through, I've heard it's called, it was a reconciliation bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it actually couldn't cut, like people were kind of really obsessed with what it was going to do to the national deficit and the Republicans, because this plays into the economy and the way we invest, right? Because I think the criticism that came into this bill was it doesn't cut enough, and therefore the bond markets are going to react negatively to it because the cost of borrowing is going to go up, our national deficit is going to go up. We've already had a bond degraded rating on the United States and on treasuries. And so treasuries are going to start getting beat up. And that's going to cause treasury interest rates to rise, potentially short-term interest rates to rise on current loans that people are getting. And it could have devastating impacts to the economy and how we invest in the short, at least in the short term, right? What other bills are upcoming that could also reduce taxes? Because I believe a reconciliation bill can only touch certain things or certain parts of the tax code. And I believe there's like another, they're going to meet again and they're going to cut more or they're going to change the taxes again, right? Is that the case?
So I guess there's two things there. There's a rescissions package that's going through right now. They're trying to cut, right? So basically this is done through my understanding of it is that the president kind of says, hey, I want these cuts, right? And then Congress tries to pass it as a legislation. We do have the GOP have an opportunity to do another reconciliation bill. I'm going to be writing about what I think it's kind of like, after the Super Bowl, like, hey, who's going to win next year, right, type of thing. I'm going to be writing one of those articles, but I think it's going to show up in that bill, right? So, but yeah. Basically,
okay. Fun.
They have another opportunity to take a shot at another reconciliation bill, right? And so they want to do that because all in 2026, in November, guess what? A lot of elections are happening and a lot of Republican seats are up and who knows what's going to happen. I don't have that crystal ball. but they don't want to take that chance either. So they're probably going to try to get another tax package through.
Got it. Makes sense.
I want to talk about kind of an obscure provision for just a second, and it's the qualified small business stock rule. This is not something that we've touched on the podcast before. So could you explain what that is when you're investing in, say, you know, early stage startups, venture? Can you explain this in a nutshell? And then what are the changes that took place in this bill?
Yeah, 1202 is one of the most advantageous provisions out there, right? It's like 1031 for real estate is what I'd liken it to, basically. And basically what the government says is, hey, guess what? You are wanting to create this startup business and you're going to go take some big risks with it. And so we're going to give you a massive tax break for doing that, right? And so essentially, if you are not what I consider to be a service in type industry, basically, so if like this, you see, this actually happens a lot with software companies. A lot of Silicon Valley uses 1202 qualified small business stock. And so what they do is they form as a C corp. They issue, like, everyone gets a piece of stock. You don't take money out of the, right? Because we talked about a lot before, C corps can be disadvantageous from a tax perspective because of dividends and double taxation, right?
Right.
But in this example, you're saying, I'm going to shove all the cash into this thing because I know in 5 to 10 years, I'm going to sell this puppy. The goal is not for me to hold this long term. The goal is to build it up as quick as I can and then sell it off. So that means if you held that stock in your original holder at 5 years, you get a $10 million gain exclusion. That's actually just like the least beneficial, right? So that's like the least biggest benefit you can get. There's other ways you can stack and make that bigger.
Right. And that's per investor. And an investor can make a $10 million gain on their investment in this early stage startup. And it's 100% capital gains tax free.
Yep. So basically, let's say you sell for $10 million, right? Or if you have a, let's say you sell for $50 million, your basis is 40, you got $10 million gain, right? That's going to be $2 million that goes right back into your pocket instead of you having paying to the government.
Right. Right. Or if you invested $100,000 and it goes to $5 million,
right,
all of that is tax-free.
Essentially.
So there are some new provisions in this tax bill, right? That originally you had to hold it for 5 years and one day in order to get that. And it was all or nothing. You sold it 4 years and, you know, 300 days later, no, you owe capital gains tax. Now, as I understand it, there's a 50% gain exclusion after 3 years, 75% after four, and then you get the full 100% exclusion after five.
Yep, that's the new rule. Basically, they're trying to give more off ramps for people. So people get hesitant getting into these types of deals. Like, hold on, you're telling me my capital is going to be locked up for 5 years. And that makes some people antsy. But this way of saying, hey, if you want out after 3 years, here's a little bit of a, you get a piece of your cake and you get to eat it too, right? That's the whole point of this, in my opinion. Now, I want to say a quick FYI. It's a really weird quirk. That other 50% of gain that's taxable, not taxed at 20%, taxed at 28%. It's a weird preferential thing. So just a quick FYI there that I think some people forget about.
Excellent. Okay, moving on, because that's sort of an obscure provision.
No, yeah. And the only other one I wanted to add in is the child care or the child tax credit increased to $2,000, I think, per child.
$2,200. So basically, nice. $1,000 was the old credit. Now it's basically they've locked in $2,000 and they increased another $200.
Excellent.
So on the cut side, right? Spending cut, right? Doesn't, you know, all this stuff didn't just come with just cuts. We have to cut spending. In some places, Medicaid cuts, food stamps or SNAP cuts, Medicare potential cuts, and clean energy stuff has been changed or eliminated some incentives on EVs. I mean, NOAA forecasting fund cuts to the National Weather Service, that's gone under some criticism in light of recent events in Texas, Consumer Bureau and other agencies. So these are major things, right? $930 billion in Medicaid cuts. You know, it's come over under a lot of criticism. Can we kind of speak to that? It does have like a work requirement now, where you got to work so many hours to get Medicaid. Can we kind of talk to some of these spending cut issues?
Yeah. So a lot of that. Yeah. So look, these are not tax provisions, so I'm definitely not the expert on these types of items, right?
Sure.
But that's my understanding, is that there's some working requirements that are involved there. Basically, there's Social Security number requirements that you actually see throughout the tax bill, and then of course the energy credit cuts, right? So basically, the Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act a couple of years ago under the Biden administration, and then the Republicans went, thank you so much, we're going to use that to pay for our new bill, right? And so that basically is what happened here. They ripped all that out, and said, thanks so much. Thanks for helping us pay for all of our new tax cuts, right? And so it's what they basically did. You just trade one form of tax cuts for another form of tax cuts, what's happened here. And so talking about the EV credit, like you mentioned, right? So if you want to get a Tesla, Rivian, whatever, you're going to have to get a contract today or before September 30th to actually get advantage of this credit. And then a lot of the residential home energy credits too, those are kind of going away as well. Basically, if you place them in service this year, you're fine. If you decide to get solar panels or something like, or a geothermal pump in 2026, you're not going to be fine. Those go away at the end of this tax year. So just FYI there. However, do want a caveat. Based on my current reading of the bill, solar panels for a business property still in play. It's just residential, like your personal home, that goes away at the end of 2025.
Interesting.
Ben, let's be honest. I looked into getting solar panels for my house, and they just mark up the tax savings in the price of the solar panels anyway. So
that's a big secret ultimately here.
Yeah. Who was really getting that tax credit? Not the individual.
Well, and Ryan, you can only make power in Seattle like 4 months out of the year.
Yeah, that's true.
So very true. Going back to the entitlement spending, I have a stat here that I think is really interesting. And I don't think this gets talked about in the media. Anytime you try to cut an entitlement, everybody gets up in arms and it's like, this is my right. But let me read this. The average age of the U.S. population is 40 years old today. In 1970, it was 28. In 1980, it was 30. And in 2020, it was 38. So when your workforce stagnates, your retiree population explodes, problems ensue. Currently, there are slightly over 2 people in prime working age labor force to support every retiree. By 2035, 10 years from now, the dependency ratio will be 1.8. So it is important. I mean, you look at that stat, it is important to get entitlements under control and make sure that we don't go broke with the silver tsunami. You know, I mean, it's just a fact that there are less kids than there are this big demographic tidal wave of people entering retirement age, and people are living longer and longer. So anyway, 2 cents, take it or leave it, but something to just an objective fact to put into your decision making or your opinion making when you're looking at this stuff.
Well, I mean, I think, again, non-political show, but at the end of the day, nobody wants their little special corner cut, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to cut spending on old people. We don't want to cut spending on young people. We don't want to cut spending on businesses. We don't want to cut spending on employees. We don't want to cut spending on people who can't work or don't work, or right. Everybody's got their own. And so when we have a political agenda, everyone's going to run to the corner to the reason why they got elected, and they're going to represent their special interest groups.
Yep.
And, you know, this is the way that the pendulum is swinging right now, is cuts to entitlement spending, and permanent tax cuts for probably most of the constituents of the elected officials. Right. And I think, Nathan, I can't wait to read your article about predictions for the next bill, because, you know, with elections in play, and seats in jeopardy, you know, that's going to be wildly different and very dramatic.
All right, we got 10 minutes left, and we saved the best for last. Tips and overtime. So, as airline pilots, we have a minimum guarantee, and everybody's wondering, what happens when I pick up that green slip? What happens when I pick up that double time slip now?
Can I just ruin it, Tate?
You definitely.
Yep, go ahead.
It phases out at how much per year?
300. So basically at $300,000 of gross income is where it starts to phase out.
What
if you write off a bunch of real estate against your W-2 because you claim rep status, or you do an STR loophole,
okay,
or
so
you
let's
invest
let's
in
that.
Some oil and gas?
Yeah, definitely. 100% can qualify and can work that way. Definitely can.
So let me just make sure we're very clear. So is it any overtime up to 300K, and then any money made after 300K, you don't get the, or is it all or nothing?
Yeah. So how the provision works right now is basically, at least, and this is our understanding, we need regulation and guidance from the IRS for a little bit more understanding of this. So basically, the provision specifically referenced to the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, right? Not a tax provision whatsoever. And so there's a little bit of ambiguity, whether it's just because that statute specifically mentions 1.5 time overtime. So That's the question right now. Are you going to be eligible for basically your differential, or are you going to be eligible just for the half piece? We don't know that right now. But like you mentioned, if you find a way to get your adjusted gross income down below $300,000, it should qualify you and should allow you to take advantage of the $25,000 of overtime compensation here and allow that to be tax-free. How that happens, so it's a deduction.
So it's specifically time and a half. It's not double time.
The provision specifically lists that. The statute written in the tax bill is ambiguous. And so we're going to need guidance from Treasury, which the IRS, on how exactly they want to define that.
Well, I volunteer as tribute.
And so just to make sure I'm very clear, so that Southwest pilot I talked about who made $400K, but then did the short-term rental loophole, did a bunch of syndications, whatever it is, got his adjusted gross income down to, like, let's say 290 for the purposes of easy discussion. He qualifies for no tax on overtime, potentially, if this whole thing works out with green slips and all that, right?
Basically, okay. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Very
that's
interesting.
Huge.
So, yeah, that's a big nuance. And I know, so Nathan,
real quick. So how does that work from a practical standpoint? Because you just said it, but it's a deduction. What does that mean?
Correct. Yeah. So it's not an income. So there are income exclusions in the tax code, right? Like selling your principal residence, stuff like that, where it's like, it's not including your income whatsoever. This is a deduction. So basically it says, hey, if you have overtime reported on your W-2, which is going to be a lot more boxes on your W-2 going forward, just FYI. And so there'll be a box that says, hey, Tate made $20,000 of overtime this year, right? This is his overtime differential that he made. And so then what's going to happen, you're going to report that, and there's going to be an offsetting line somewhere on your tax form that shows no tax on overtime, overtime compensation, basically. And it's going to be a $20,000 deduction to offset that.
Okay. Got it. So it's just it net neutralizes.
It does.
As long as
it
you're
neutralizes
below
it, but it's in the form of a deduction instead of like an income exclusion.
So if you made $310,000, but you can't take the deduction, so you're screwed.
That's when.
But
thankfully, they did not make a cliff. Cliffs are bad for tax policy. It's a climbing threshold. So for every $1,000 over the threshold, you lose $100 of a deduction, right? So as you steadily climb over that, like, you will get phased out, but it's not an immediate. So if you were just over it, you still get to take advantage of some of it.
Okay. So 301, 302, you're still keeping most of the deduction. That's fantastic.
The criticism of this tax on tips, and I'm not talking about airline pilots because we can't really hide it, but most hospitality staff are going to say, well, I take all my tips in cash anyway. Do you have a sense of like how much of an impact it's really going to have on that industry?
Yeah. So what I'll say is that, like, I mean, like, me personally, I should do it more often. I don't tip cash, right? I tip on my credit card, right? I swipe the credit card.
Right.
Those get reported, right? All those electronics are like, don't let social media say only cash tips, right? It's the credit card tips too that are really important, because I'll be honest, I don't know a lot of people that do cash tips personally anymore. So there's still a lot of that reporting going on.
I never carry cash.
Yeah, neither. And I know a ton of people that work in the restaurant industry, or at least I used to. And it's like, you know, every 2 weeks they get a paycheck and it'd be for like $50 for 80 hours of work, because the IRS was saying, well, you sold X amount, and so you should have been tipped X. And it was really unfair when they got stiffed, because it was like, well, I'm literally working for free because the IRS is taxing me on what I should be tipped. I think it's fair. I also think it's great now that, you know, the guy that holds this hat out as the airplane is deplaning, they don't have to report those cash tips either.
Yeah. Tip your pilots.
The more
tip your pilot, tip your waitress. Right. Hey, that landing was great. I mean, you're tipping your Uber drivers, right? Some of you guys are.
That's a good point. That's
but you're not going to tip the guy that takes the plane, or the gal that takes the plane to 35,000 feet safely for a few thousand miles. Come on now. You know, we're giving you baseball cards on some of our flights. You should be giving us tips. You know,
that's hilarious. There are rules behind it. So it's got to be places that are. It's got to be industries that are not, that are customarily and ordinarily tipped. So you've never been tipped before, right? So accountants and attorneys can't start making their invoices and be like, hey, it's only $100 invoice, but like, here's a required tip, right? That we put on here now. I wish we could go that route, but we can't do that.
But it's tips and overtime, right? To be clear.
There's overtime and tips. Absolutely.
Two different buckets. Gotcha. Well, that's huge, because if you're only making $200K, and you get called for a time and a half trip, I mean, that's awesome. You know, I've been saying for years, you know, unless you have a tax mitigation strategy in place, well, I don't know. This is more for the guys that are making, guys and gals making $500,000-$700,000 a year and just whoring themselves out for that extra, you know,
technical term.
Yeah, that's technical term. That's a technical pilot term. You know, and working 25 days a month and picking up all the soft time that they can to get their credit, you know, through the roof. And it's like, hey, if you don't have a tax mitigation plan in place and you're living in a mildly tax heavy state, you're giving almost half of that away to the government at that point because you're in the highest tax bracket. And so this is amazing because, I mean, if you have a huge cost seg that you can do during the year, you're doing that short-term rental strategy, you know, I'm getting a $300,000 tax deduction on a property we just bought this year that's going right against my W-2 and my wife's income, right? And so we'll definitely be under that for this year. So anything I pick up on top is gravy. This is super cool.
Now, Nathan, we've got a couple more minutes left. What are you most excited about? Like what you personally reading this whole thing, let's end on what is your major takeaway or your major exciting?
So here's what my major takeaway is. This bill is the first step. I don't know if the other economists have spoken about this. Economists love the idea of being able to write off. You buy an asset, no matter whether it's a $2 million building or a $200 computer. Therefore, the idea that you get to write that off in that year, regardless of what it is. This bill takes us closer to that step, right? 179 thresholds got a massive boost. So that a more immediate expensing for commercial properties, which are short-term rentals, by the way. And then bonus appreciation being permanently 100%, right? We've always had a little bit of a phase out where it goes down. It's stuck there. And then also, this is the first step that we've had to this where factory buildings, manufacturing buildings, you basically, we talked about 39-year piece that you can't immediately write off and deduct. In this provision, if you own a factory, if you're purchasing or building a factory this year, you get to write off the 39-year portion of that building. And that's the first step. This is the first big step in that direction. And I'm a big fan of that because I think that's going to really, it helps stimulate the economy. It helps save everybody on taxes. And I just think it creates a lot of good things for the economy.
Hard to deny that this isn't going to be a massive throttle a juice to the economy.
It increases the throttle, right? That's like a
twisting the throttle, you know, putting the throttles up. It really is going to create some tailwinds for the economy. I mean, you know, everybody for the last year, 2 years, 3 years has been saying like, are we going to go into a recession? Are we going to go into a recession? And it's like, you know, forget the soft landing, man. We just did a go around.
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate having you on as always. Thank you for your wisdom. Thanks for all the research that you did into this bill so that you can break it down for us laymen. We hope that this wasn't too technical for the listeners, but maybe something you have to go back and listen to again.
Yeah.
Look forward to having you on again.
Yeah. And by the way, if you want to hire Nathan to be your accountant, go to Hall CPAs. If you can click the link in the show notes.
Yep.
Mention Passive Income Pilots. We do have a special with Hall CPAs. So work with the best and the brightest in the industry and take advantage of the tax code that's in front of you. So thanks everybody for listening. Thanks, Nathan.
Catch you on the next episode.
Thank you, guys.